Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, as well as the amazing Jeff Bridges. Come on.
That movie was amazing.
Keep it going. Give it up for the What a treat this is. I was just telling you backstage that that Jeff Cronenwith, who was the incredible cinematographer on this film, the way he played with aspect ratios, when you're in the grid, you're in 190, when you're in the real world, 239, and they combine, there's something beautiful about the images and how it's married to your music. I'm sure this is a question you've answered already, but I find it interesting as somebody who follows your score work in films, you've always been credited as Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. But now in this film, for the first time, I believe, you're credited as Nine Inch Nails. Can you speak about that decision, but also, do you see a difference between those two when you score as Trent and Atticus versus when you score as Nine Inch Nails?
Yes, yeah, interesting. trying to make a short version of this answer. We became good friends with Tom McDougall at Disney when we worked on Soul with Pixar. And Tom became a friend through that process and lives down the street and came by a few years ago and said, just want to run an idea by you. Would you be open to working on a new Tron film? Immediately we said, yeah, for sure. The idea of Tron resonates with us and means something to us, you know. And then he said another idea. Would you be into the idea of it being called Nine Inch Nails as opposed to Trent and Atticus? And we hadn't really thought about that, but as we did start to think about it, there's one side of it that's practical from a marketing perspective. Seeing a logo can do a lot more heavy lifting than two names. But in an artistic way, what that seed planted was, you know, when we work on films, we attempt at the beginning of any project to disappear into the film, and our role is to help tell the story and hopefully help you feel a certain way when you watch a movie. And it's fun for us to kind of set up rules of what instruments we're going to use, what strategy we're going to deploy. And when thinking of it through the lens of calling it Nine Inch Nails, it set up a certain, right from the start, feeling that meant we weren't going to completely disappear and become, there would be a more limited set of choices of how we would approach it. And it also gave us some power when working with the creative team, director, producers, etc., of what it was going to sound like. We wanted it to sound less like a typical score and more like, for one, I didn't think it should be orchestral at all. I thought it should be all electronic, and particularly with the plot of this film, let's lean into it sounding synthetic, heavily synthetic at times. So anyway, it really did change the way it ended up sounding and the way we approached it, of thinking it as an extension of the idea of Nine Inch Nails, if that makes sense.
No, it's interesting. Atticus, for you, I was thinking about the filmmakers that you've worked with, Luca, Sam Mendes. I mean, you have some brilliant, David Fincher. By the way, Jeff Cronenwith, who shot this movie, shot the Perfect Drug video, which is remarkable to think about all those years later. What is your process like with directors in terms of your narrative conversations? And because every director is different, Fincher's different, everybody, and I'm wondering how that process works as a composer, how it differs between different filmmakers.
Well, I think it's always about, it starts with understanding the director's vision and embarking on a collaboration together to hopefully, whatever they've imagined in their heads, we can exceed that in terms of the storytelling that we can do with the music. In this particular case, because this sort of ties into what Trent was saying as well, I think calling it Nine Inch Nails and having similar discussions, I don't know how to quite phrase it. I think it's not exactly education, but we wanted to take some risks. That it there was a learning process in terms of, you know, an example I can give you is the light skimmer chase, which is one of my favorite sequences in the film. Yeah. And that obviously goes to vocal. All of that was deliberate. And you can feel it plays, you know, in the song on the album. When we first delivered it, they didn't put it in the film. It was too... because it was taking things in a radically different direction.
Your trans voice, yeah.
Well, and also may or may not have been attempted in there before, generally speaking, across the whole film, this was so different. And we're at a point in the film where we thought we've earned the right for that kind of vocal to enter. Especially set against that scene and, you know, two characters. What I'm trying to make is the question that you're asking is something that reveals itself deeper and deeper over time. And I think that they came to trust us. You know, that scene that originally, I don't want to say freaked people out, but whatever, that definitely became one of the ones that they're most proud of.
You wore them down. You asked for none inch nails.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Mr. Bridges. The things I want to ask you right now that I wish I could ask you, we don't have a lot of time, but you have been scored by some of the greatest composers of all time. I want to mention Carter Burwell. We were talking backstage about Starman,
Jeff Nietzsche.
Yeah. And I was curious, as an actor, what's interesting about score, generally speaking, is you don't have that music there on set. And when the film is done and goes into editing and post-production, that music brings an elevation of some sort to the material. And I have to imagine that there's a relationship that you have as a musician yourself when you see yourself set to music. And I'm just curious what that process is like for you. Obviously, we can speak about Tron as well, but in general, as a musician, when you see the work you did set to music, what does that feel like?
What brings it, pops into my head, doing a movie called Fearless, with, help me out, Nasi, I forget this guy, yeah. Help me out, what's his name? Who directed Fearless? Peter Weir, that's man.
Thank you.
Peter scored our work days. He made a little cassette that he would score each day of work. So as we were working, you know, the grips and the electricians, we were all into the same groove. We were hearing what, you know, that music. And then we'd watch dailies. They don't do that probably much anymore, but you know, they show you the work that we did yesterday. And he would score that. Wow. He had his boom box there and he would play. And then at the end of the movie, he gave everybody a cassette with all of that music that we listened to. Wow. So, you know, music was just, Steve and I, when I make a movie, I'll have my playlists, you know, that I'll listen to in the trailer and so forth. Was that anywhere near your question?
No, it isn't. What's Kevin Flynn's playlist?
Yeah.
Like, what's a playlist that helps you get in his head?
That was over 40 years ago, first thing. But, Wendy Carlos, who the guys used in this
first
film, too, what a great score that was. And, so many things, you know, as we do these interviews, it triggers different things. When we were doing the original Tron, Lisberger, who was his first film.
Steven
Lisberger. And the walls of his stage were coated with video games that you didn't have to pay for.
Nice.
And I'd be on there, and my game was Battle Zone. Anybody know that game? And I was locked into it, man. And they came, come on, we got a shit. I'm preparing, man. But that kind of music,
But Jack Nietzsche's score for Starman.
Oh, Jack and Starman. Oh. Yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Well, I'll continue with you because obviously you, as the Tron films have gone on from 82 now to 2025, you've also lived your own life outside of the character, of course, but every time you step back into his shoes, you have lived a different part of your life leading up to that point. So you've gained perspective on the world, an emotional perspective. Can you compare and contrast stepping into his shoes in 82 versus 2025 and the life that you've lived in between and kind of how it affects the way you think?
Well, it was always advanced. You know, everything, it was all about, you know, the future, what was just ahead, you know. Now, the original Tron, the sets were black duvetine with white adhesive tape. And those were our sets, shot in 70 millimeter black and white, and then hand tinted by a bunch of Korean ladies, you know. That was what that movie was. The next one in Legacy, I got scanned, just like, you know, he gets, you know, zapped with the thing. I get scanned. That was the first time when they started to do that, you know. So I'm now in the computer, you know, and they can do with me what they will. And I, you know, when I saw that, you know, Legacy, I didn't like it. I thought it looked more like Bill Maher. I said, that's always book me a program. So that, you know, but everything is, you know, just a little bit. Now, seeing that, I saw the film last night, and my gosh, the special effects, so strong and beautiful. So it's always that, you know, newness. You know, that's the general feeling on each of the films.
You know, Trent, I've been listening to you for so many years, and then to see the work you've done and you and Atticus have done in films is so interesting. I was wondering if you can talk about the writing process of a Nine Inch Nails album in terms of like a song versus a theme or a piece of score, because what's beautiful about this film and what's beautiful about the music that you create and Social Network and all these movies that you make is the score is a character. It's a leading character in the movie. There's an atmospheric quality to it. And as the arc of the character progresses, the score, I believe, in my opinion, feels like it progresses as well. And with a song, we put the song on like a Nine Inch Nails album, it's also a story. It's also an arc. It has a beginning, middle, and end. Can you speak about the difference in writing themes versus songs, I guess, if I can put it that way?
That's an easy question.
Some softballs.
When we were first approached by David Fincher, many years ago for Social Network, you know. It was a panicked couple of weeks where I had no idea how you write for movies. You know, I've watched a lot of films, I enjoyed soundtracks, I know how to write songs to some degree. But I didn't know I wasn't sure how to approach it, you know, and we didn't go to school for that, we didn't train for that, and we didn't want to screw up his film, which we got talked into saying yes to, you know. And it really came down to trusting our own instinct and thinking about it like, you know, if I were to write a song, I would be telling a story that I know what I wanted to say. Lyrics play a role. Music can support that and play to it or play against it, or it might add tension or that, but my end result is I want you to feel a certain way. I want you to feel goosebumps and be sucked into this feeling I'm trying to convey through the song. This is what I'm thinking about. And, you know, I remember with Social Network, I didn't know how to write a scene of someone turning a corner, walking through a campus. That last 23 seconds. But I knew what it felt like to be that character that felt, you know, in the case of Zuckerberg's character in that film, you know, believed in something that felt passionate about, realized he might have gone too far and it cost him a lot of things, but felt like it was a noble pursuit that at the end up and feeling hollow and may have screwed people over. I know those feelings, you know. And I think kind of substituting what lyrics would play, substituting that in for a scene and a score, and really core of what I'm saying is focusing on the emotional content of how should you feel hearing the song? How does the director want you to feel? What story is he telling? How can we contribute emotionally to that? that became a kind of very instinctual recipe. We followed on everything, including this film. There's a lot of thought on Tron, Ares, about what came before, what Wendy Carlos did, what Daft Punk did, what feels like Tron. Earlier I said Tron means something to us. What is that? Is it that we love those movies in particular, or was it the feeling of Tron? Like, I think for me, it was also being in arcades in 1982 or 3, and that video game, next to Battlezone, was the Tron game, that was, it felt like the future, it felt like the possibility, the possible menace of AI, etc. We thought a lot about where this film sits in that. We thought a lot about the emotional read of the story that's being told and try to hone in on that long-winded answer.
No, I think it's a natural progression that you guys made into movies, because I always found your music to be cinematic as a kid. I would listen to your music and I would feel stories, I would feel feelings. And there's that great moment in the film where Jared Leto's character is trying to describe Esh Mode. And he runs out of words. And he's like, it's just a feeling. Atticus, for you, do you know, what's the first song that comes to mind to you that you heard that made you feel that way, or an artist that made you feel that way that you couldn't describe what it felt like?
I know the first song that I could sing the lyrics to was Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-Ling. That was Tammy Jukebox as a toddler. Maybe inappropriate, but you know. It transported me in one way or another.
I appreciate it.
Anyway, going back to Tron, what I would say is, to pick up on what Trent was saying as well, is that the other thing we spent a lot of time on, because I think sometimes people can say, well, the score's a banger and the score's a this and a that, and there's a tragic element that I think that we play to, and there's an architecture with the score that we spent an incredible amount of time trying to put together. Just in terms of, sometimes I feel like electronic music, and this could just be my paranoia or whatever, it can be dismissed as somehow non-thematic. Yeah. But this is a score that is very much based in themes. Even if those themes aren't an orchestra blasting necessarily, it could be a sonic motif or whatever it might be. You can follow the strands of what we've done, I think, through from the very first scene to the end, and it makes sense in a way that I think gives another layer of understanding to the film, or at least our understanding of what the film is trying to say.
It's interesting you bring that up, because the hair on my arm stood up at the moment when the main Ares theme hits, as he looks up and he has his hero moment right towards the end of the film when he's in the street, and you hit that main theme and he looks up and that's it. You've been building toward that the entire time, and it hits, even if it's subconscious for the audience. Jeff, and Mr. Bridges, I obviously I've spoke about you being a musician.
Can I answer that question? Do you talk to these guys about the first movie?
Yes.
You said that, right?
Oh, yes, man. I would love for your answer for that.
My brother Bo is 9 years older than I am, so coming out of his music was all the Gray, or Chuck Berry, all that. So Wake Up Little Susie, Everly Brothers, and then I remember sitting in bed and listening, Everybody Must Get Stoned. That's all I said. Oh, yeah. I said, what is this?
The dude abides.
Dylan, man. I mean, how are you guys affected by Dylan?
Yeah.
Do you have any, what's your relationship with Dylan? Music.
For me, I would say it is fairly, not the whole career, but there are a number of, particularly the earlier records, that have resonated very deeply with me.
Yeah, Maggie's Farm, when it came out, why did they?
I can't remember when that came out.
If you Google Maggie's Farm and him playing it, oh my God, it's a good tune.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
No, no, I'll say this. One thing that both of you do that your music is so powerful is I like listening to it outside of the film as well. And I think, to me, that's the true brilliance of a great score. If you can sit and listen to it without the film, and it's its own thing, but you can go through the journey that the characters go through. I was curious for all three of you. Score is something that, it, obviously, as I mentioned, is a character in films. It's a leading character, I would argue, in this film. It's part of the DNA of the movie. Do you remember the first time each of you understood the importance of score in a film? Was there a movie that you saw, and you were like, I get it. I get why music and visual are so, like, you look at 2001 and things like that, and Kubrick. Like, I'm just curious if you have one for each of you.
You know, having been asked a variation of that question over time, you start to land on certain things, you know, Jaws, Taxi Driver. Picture that film without that score, it doesn't feel the same. And that wouldn't be the score I would think to put on that film, Taxi Driver, but it feels so, it makes the film feel wider and cooler. Halloween, John Carpenter, you know, hugely influential.
We're talking about
John Carpenter directed Starman.
Yeah,
sure. Right.
Atticus, for you?
I mean, very, very similar. I can't really, I mean, obviously I can talk about Blade Runner or Midnight Express or whatever it might be, but the film that I really remember the music was being taken to Jaws too young and terrified I was.
Yeah.
And understanding in the cinema, and it actually was A Man's Chinese, that what I'm being scared by isn't just a picture. There's a combination going on with the music and the picture that is terrifying.
The power of two notes. That's kind of incredible. Mr. Bridges, for you, do you remember?
Yeah, what popped into my head was A Man and a Woman. Anybody remember that? Any of you old guys remember that tune? Remember that tune? And that was originally a commercial, I think, that they spread out for the movie, but that popped into my head. And then also David Mansfield's score to Heaven's Gate, you know, all that traditional stuff that he turned into a beautiful score. It pops into my mind.
What I was trying to ask earlier, because you're a musician, I think the way you speak your dialogue feels like music to me. There's something about, there's a rhythm to it. That's really interesting.
There is a group called the Surskis. Do you know these guys?
Yeah.
They came up with a wild notion. Because we speak musically, right? I mean, there's that. So this guy had this idea to take messages on his answering machine and very strictly put music to it. And it works beautifully. My favorite one is something like Sister, it's called Sister. The Sister, remember the time I had to go pee so bad and I peed in the car? That's what it's like right now. And but the music to it, and we do, we speak in musical terms, you know. And it's interesting studying lines, like what is the music here? You know, and the pauses, and there's music all over the place.
Lebowski speaks musically, man.
Yeah.
He does. He just does. I'll end on this because what I love about watching this film was the sound design mixed in with the score, the sound effects and everything, which is cool because there's like this one moment where like the tick of a timing on her arm, on the arm, matches the beat of your music. And I was like, that's really cool. And I wondered if you could each speak on the idea of understanding the world that you're playing the music for, the sound effects that will be there accompanying the music that you're doing, because you have the crashing and the blowing up and all these things that play into it. How aware are you as composers that those are going to be placed around your music?
One of the first things we did, because it was a new team of people this time around, was insist on meeting with the sound design team, talk with the director immediately about, let's all get on the same page, let's start on the same page, and let's treat it like everyone's hearing it with ears. Everything comes out of speakers into our ears. Let's not split score into one thing and sound effects over here, because often what will happen, we've learned, is after you've worked on something for, in this case, a year and a half, get to the sound stage to mix it, and there's a, a battle takes place between the sound design team and us. And everybody's trying to push the fader up. And to avoid that, we encourage working in concert and sharing information. And as they deliver new sound effects, we're keeping them up to speed with the score. There's discussions about what key we're working in, because a lot of times the tuning of sound effects can be complementary and feel like music, or feel like it's not rubbing necessarily. And this was it wasn't without its moments of friction, but it was two team, once we kind of fell each other out and got on the same page, there really was a very collaborative exchange that led to results itself.
Yeah, and that continued through to the mix. So at the end, we spent a lot of time on the mix working specifically to your question and furthering what Vincent said. So stuff would be taken out or put in, adjustments would be made. Ron Bartlett was the guy who was mixing, but I think Tormod and his team were doing sound effects. And, you know, it wasn't just like, I mean, part of it was us saying, why don't we take the music out here? Why didn't sound effects lead this section? Much like maybe music should do this, and this one, they're in harmony, concert, bouncing around
in each other. There's a lot of music in the film. Right. It's wall to wall. And so like Eric said, it was, hey, why don't you guys lead on this section, you know, so we can have a vacation or
two. I think it's always fascinating when you watch movies that have minimal score, like No Country for Old Men has no score, essentially, and it's still effective. All right, they're giving me the wrap. I had 30 questions to ask you guys. I wish we could go longer. Mr. Bridges, Mr. Ross, Mr. Reznor, this has been an absolute honor. Congratulations on the film. Early screenings start tomorrow. The film officially opens Friday with Thursday showings as well. Tell all your friends about it, and you can get your new album on vinyl right now, right? You can get the new album with the soundtrack as well, so make sure you check it out. This has been an honor.
There it is, right here.
Oh, yes! There we go. Thank you guys for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.